Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Stu does America.
Welcome to the program. Follow us on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to subscribe and hit the bell for notifications. We have Aaron Sabarian coming in to follow up on his latest exclusive reporting. We talked to you about this yesterday on the Charlie Kirk assassination. You want to hear that. Hamas might be fans of the HBO show Hacks. Who knew? Who knew that it was a show? But they're definitely not fans of female bodily autonomy. That we do know. And we'll tell you what went down at the Emmys. But first, we're going to start by doing the left's defense of terrorists. And I mean, it's tough to see why they would want to do that, but they do seem to be wanting to do that. Let me explain what I mean. Charlie Kirk's accused assassin faces his initial court hearing and formal charges in Utah. Again, accused doing a bit of heavy lifting there. The guy's already admitted to it. He's on Discord to his parents. There's really no point in calling him an accused shooter, but I guess that's what you have to do as a journalist. Cash Patel was talking about this. Here is the latest on this particular investigation. Another piece of evidence came out this morning that you may have missed. Watch.
His family has collectively told investigators that he subscribed to left-wing ideology, and even more so in these last couple of years. And he had a text message exchange, the suspect, with another individual, in which he claimed that he had an opportunity to take out Charlie Kirk, and he was going to do it because of his hatred for what Charlie stood for. Those are factually accurate investigatory findings by the FBI that we've handed over to the local authorities and the federal authorities to make their prosecutorial decisions. But I believe in this instance of such public importance, the public has a right to know.
And there's a ton more going on. We're going to get into this with Aaron Sabarian here in a minute. He has gone through a bunch of this and actually was the first to report the FBI investigation over a bunch of these tweets and people that looked like they might have pre-knowledge of this situation. Here he is talking about the wide array of people that they still need to talk to.
And there are scores of people in this Discord chat room. But we have to effectuate legal process. We have to go out there with search warrants so that if prosecutors want to later use this evidence, it's not tainted by being illegally obtained. We, the FBI, are running the investigation pointedly on the Discord chat group. There are scores of individuals that are going to be spoken to. There are also lots of family members and friends that have already been spoken to. And one more point on forensics. We were able to obtain in record time the text message chain between the suspect and his live-in partner, as well as other critical cellular information from our CAS team that analyzes cell phone data towers in the area to pinpoint the locations of the suspect and other individuals he was speaking with. This is critical information that the FBI processed and got to prosecutors so they can lawfully use it in a court of law. And our investigation, our interviews continue, but we've learned some shocking things when we spoke to his family and friends.
Still a lot to find out there. He did testify, by the way, Cash Patel, defend his tenure among Kirk shootings and Epstein file furors. He got in an argument with Cory Booker, but that wasn't really about the news. That was more about Corey's tears of rage, because that's what he has. He has tears, but not tears of sadness, tears of rage. TM. That's the trademark of Cory Booker. In case you say it today, make sure you pay him his royalty. As far as you know, is the person who shot Charlie Kirk a Democrat or Republican or neither? This is a fascinating poll. People are basically split. They think maybe it's a Republican. Shockingly, this is fueled by, of course, Democrats. Only 6% or 8% believe that a Democrat was responsible for the shooting. 41% think it's a Republican. This is of Democrats. Of course, the reverse is true for Republicans, about split for independents. But we just heard the director of the FBI talk about this. Like, the only evidence we have of this guy, we have evidence that his family was a Republican, or seemingly a conservative family going back many, many years. You'll be surprised to hear that not every child comes out the same way when it comes to politics. This is something that every parent in the audience right now is torturing themselves over if they have younger children, trying to think of, gosh, how are my kids going to turn out? I hope they don't turn out like AOC. So this is a very standard thing that goes on in families. Sometimes you have wayward children. I would imagine when they were raising their kids in a wholesome conservative family, they were not thinking, hey, I can't wait for my kid to grow up to date a trans person and go shoot a conservative commentator. That's not, we don't apply the politics of the family to the kid. Yeah, they were from Utah. Pretty much everybody in Utah is conservative, but there are exceptions. And there's a wide exception in Utah. What you seemingly have in Utah, I've had several friends who live there, and when they talk about it all the time is the conservatives are conservative. They're very conservative. However, the people who, in the middle of that environment, rebel against it, become very, very liberal. It's not like your standard run-of-the-mill moderate liberals. These are people, typically, who kind of go pretty far. This person, to a ridiculous extreme, as we've seen. And we have all that evidence, right? This is quite clear. The fact that the news media is not doing its job at all and not communicating, look, this one, it doesn't mean everybody on the left is a terrible human being and is going to go shoot people, but it does mean this person is much more associated with the left. Antifa ideology, trans messaging, dating a trans person, told their family they were liberal. Their family knew they were liberal. They had become more political. They said they didn't like Charlie Kirk. The guy also said he had he knew Charlie Kirk was coming. And this is all adds up to a very easy recipe, an easy formula here to anyone who wants to follow the math. It's quite clear what happened here. And what the media is trying to do now is keep it kind of questionable enough until it gets old. And then people make up their mind and they forget it. That's what they're attempting to do. And it probably will work because it typically does. J.D. Vance hosted the Charlie Kirk show after Kirk's assassination. This was yesterday. Today's show was hosted by Ben Shapiro. Tomorrow will be hosted by Glenn Beck. So obviously encourage you to tune in if it's at all possible. I mean, I don't know how Glenn's going to get through that, man. I mean, Glenn, as I said to him, he has trouble getting through certain commercials with dramatic music. The fact that how he's going to get through this with someone from his own audience who grew up to be this incredible force in politics and then has to deal with this fate, I don't know how he's going to get through it. It's going to be one of the hardest shows he's ever done. And the guy's done shows after, 9/11 and, so many other horrible things that have happened in our country. It's going to be really difficult. The left keeps going down the same road. They're saying, he's saying that this shooter was a left wing without evidence. This is their thing that they do. It is, they did the same thing with, Trump is saying left wing violence is happening more often without evidence. J.D. Vance is saying these left wing groups are fueling this without evidence. They just throw that out there. And I want to focus on that phrase for one second. Without evidence is a very interesting phrase. It's used widely by the media today. It really started with the Trump administration because Trump would, throw things out, right? He would say things and he wouldn't always back it up. In real time and say, well, this is why I believe this. He'd just kind of say it. And so they started throwing this little addendum to everything that Trump or anyone associated with him says, which is Trump said this without evidence. Without evidence is a really tough phrase for a journalist to say, because if you're saying without evidence, like if I were to say to you, if they were to say Charlie Kirk is a racist, they might be able to find one phrase that Charlie Kirk says that they believe supports that. Now, of course, I don't think he was a racist. In fact, I know he wasn't. But that is a way to do that. If you're accusing something of something and you find one little thing, you could ignore the other context, right? And just say he's racist because of this statement. Okay? They do that to us all the time. The media does that all the time. This is a different standard. To say without evidence means you have to be aware of everything the person says. You can't just throw that out there, because if they hit it with evidence many, many times, you're going to be wrong. Now, they don't seem to care about that. But throwing that out there, those two little words, it's almost always as an aside. Donald Trump said blah, 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 without evidence and blah, blah, blah. Well, did he say it without evidence? Has he said it in other speeches? Has he addressed it 150 times? Has the Department of Justice released information indicating that this is true? Is there polling to back this all up? Well, I can tell you right now. When you make the claim that the left wing is responsible for more violence right now, there's plenty of evidence to support that. And the rhetoric leading to this, there's plenty of evidence to support that. They're often quoting Democratic politicians and thought leaders when they're doing these things. So without evidence is ridiculous. It's a very high standard. It's like a charter of negative liberties. You need to be able to say that they've never presented any evidence at all, whether you agree with that evidence or not. That's not how they're using that phrase, and it should be called out. Notice when they do that. They're doing it all the time. Let me give you a clip of J.D. Vance hosting this show. I want to play a decent chunk of this because it was powerful. But also, when I heard this morning, they said, oh, well, J.D. Vance said that these left-wing groups were more violent than right-wing groups without evidence. And he said, well, he says he's going to crack down on left-wing groups, and he gave no names at all. I could tell you hadn't watched the show or listened to what he said because he did do all that stuff. Here's a decent clip of it for you.
First, we must tell the truth. It's the only way to honor Charlie, for what was he, if not a man who told the truth in every place, in every environment? Another truth is that 26% of young liberals believe political violence is sometimes justified.
26%.
And only 7% of young conservatives say the same. Again, too high a number.
Four times, though, the other number.
In a country of 330 million people, you can, of course, find one person of a given political persuasion justifying this or that or almost anything. But the data is clear. People on the left are much likelier to defend and celebrate political violence. This is not a both sides problem. If both sides have a problem, one side has a much bigger and malignant problem, and that is the truth we must be told. And now, the most influential conservative activist in generations, our friend Charlie, has been murdered. This violence, it doesn't come from nowhere. Now, any political movement, violent or not violent, is a collection of forces. It's like a pyramid that stacks on top, one support on top of the other. That pyramid's got a foundation of donors, of activists, of journalists, now of social media influencers, and of course of politicians. Not every member of that pyramid would commit a murder. In fact, over 99%, I'm sure, would not. But by celebrating that murder, apologizing for it, and emphasizing not Charlie's innocence, but the fact that he said things some didn't like, even to the point of lying about what he actually said, many of these people are creating an environment where things like this are inevitably going to happen. We can thank God that most Democrats don't share these attitudes, and I do, while acknowledging that something has gone very wrong with a lunatic fringe, a minority, but a growing and powerful minority on the far left.
Yep.
There is no unity with people who scream at children over their parents' politics. There is no unity with someone who lies about what Charlie Kirk said in order to excuse his murder. There is no unity with someone who harasses an innocent family the day after the father of that family lost a dear friend. There is no unity with the people who celebrate Charlie Kirk's assassination. And there is no unity with the people who fund these articles, who pay the salaries of these terrorist sympathizers, who argue that Charlie Kirk, a loving husband and father, deserved a shot to the neck because he spoke words with which they disagree. Did you know that the George Soros Open Society Foundation and the Ford Foundation, the groups who funded that disgusting article justifying Charlie's death, do you know they benefit from generous tax treatment? They are literally subsidized by you and me, the American taxpayer. And how do they reward us? By setting fire to the house built by the American family over 250 years. I am desperate for our country to be united in condemnation of the actions and the ideas that killed my friend. I want it so badly that I will tell you a difficult truth. We can only have it with people who acknowledge that political violence is unacceptable, and when we work to dismantle the institutions that promote violence and terrorism in our own country.
I mean, I think it's quite clear. By the way, he's not, and this is not the first poll that's showed this, but here you go. Liberals more likely to say political violence is sometimes justified. He wasn't lying about that. We can start light when looking at this as well, the reaction. This is one from Piers Morgan just yesterday. Yes, the incredible authority figure, liberal streamer Destiny, said this.
I think that liberals need to wake up and finally realize that if they're not willing to do it, it will never come down. If you wanted Charlie Kirk to be alive, Donald Trump shouldn't have been president for the second term. Every time he's in office, this happens.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much. If you can't trust liberal streamer destiny, who can you trust? By the way, it's not just, you know, streamers, whack jobs online. Of course, you can find people who say everything there. That's not no big accomplishment. Here's some people you might be a little more familiar with.
Inscriptions on the three unfired casings read, "Hey fascist!" exclamation point. Catch! Exclamation point.
Do you think Donald Trump is a fascist?
Yes, I do.
No one has ever been more dangerous to this country than Donald Trump, and he is a fascist to his core.
And him and shut down the city! We are at war!
We're in a war right now.
We are at war.
So you have to be willing to do whatever is necessary in order to save the country.
And that's why the gloves are off.
Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic.
And yes, there are many threats to democracy. We see it with these extreme candidates.
I just don't even know why there aren't uprisings all over the country, and maybe there will be.
But you can only push people so far. And then they start to take matters into their own hands.
What the American public want is for us to bring actual weapons to this bar fight. This is an actual fight.
You know, this is literally call to arms.
The MAGA
literally
movement is a threat.
Michelle Wood says that, you know, when they go low, we go high.
No. With all due respect, if they go low, we don't go high.
When they go low, we kick them.
We take them to the mud and choke them out.
And make sure that they stay down. And you know what? Kick them when they're down, because they deserve it.
Get up in the face of some Congress people.
We are going to be in your face. We are going to be on your...
We have to fight this in the streets.
We're going to fight it in the streets.
It's time to step out of your comfort zone and step out into the streets.
To our Republican colleagues, if you do not see the light, we will bring the fire. Resist!
You and your little friend off of Twitter, y'all about to find out.
And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome anymore, anywhere.
He's not going to have a good time. He may not be a victim.
That's the last few days you woke up thinking there might be news. Just saying. There will be news sometime, just so you know. There will be news.
Talking about the death of Donald Trump there. That's the last one. The president, vice presidential candidate of the other party. We should just play that every single day this week, just to remind people of all of it. Trump and his advisors are planning on a crackdown for left-wing groups, channeling anger over Charlie Kirk's killing. I love how it's, we're the angry ones. After our guy gets murdered, we're the angry ones. We're channeling that anger. By the way, that was their updated headline. Their initial headline told more of the truth of what was happening. Trump says he would designate Antifa and other left-wing groups as domestic terrorists. Well, it's a little bit different than just saying left-wing groups, but I guess left-wing groups are scarier. One of the things that came out of this, too, is the left constantly asking this question. They just can't believe it. Can you believe? Can you possibly even imagine that the president of the United States would target his political enemies, call them risky, dangerous to society? Well, we just heard a bunch of that rhetoric. So I can imagine it, actually. I can imagine it because I've lived through it over and over and over again. I do remember the speech that Joe Biden gave when he stood in front of the red wall, yelling, or at this particular moment, maybe yawning at us. I don't know. Telling us that MAGA was so bad and so evil and we needed to crack down on them and they were dangerous to our democracy and blah, blah, blah. I remember how unending that was. You might remember the speech. Do you remember the motivation for it? Do you remember the killing that led to that speech? Do you remember the murder that led to that speech? I don't think a lot of people do. One of the reasons for that is there wasn't one. There wasn't a major Democratic figure who was assassinated in the middle of that moment he made that speech. That was just like a pre-midterm rebranding. It was like Cracker Barrel. It was like, oh, gosh, whatever we're doing now is not working. Let's try something else. Put him in front of a red wall and call everybody Hitler. That was just their rebrand before the midterms. That's all it was. And that happened in that administration. It happened during the Obama administration over and over and over again. It's happened for years and years and years and years to the extent that they've even called David freaking Barton an extremist. A guy who's like the nicest guy in the world. David Barton. The ADL called him that many times over the years and continue to have him on list after list after list, which seems to be proving as a list for Democrats to target. You know, Obama and Biden have done this to the right over and over and over and over again. My entire freaking career and life has been, has existed being called some level of domestic extremist. I suppose because of my association with Glenn Beck. Thanks a lot, Glenn. I appreciate everything that you've done over the years. But I go, you know, this show basically shows up in the iTunes category of domestic extremists. That's basically where we are. They've been doing this to us forever, for a long time. And when you say without evidence, the other part of the career has been spent working and showing all of these connections with all these left-wing groups. These are not just coincidences. There's a reason why this ideology exists and why it's permeated all of society. It's a lot of money is behind it. And if you happen to be in one of these groups, yeah, you should be targeted. Antifa should be targeted and should be designated a terrorist group. Now, we all know there are First Amendment lines that are, to me, very, very bright around these areas. There are, of course, differences when it comes to someone making a joke, someone making a comment, someone making a comment about politics that I absolutely despise, and someone advocating for violence over and over and over again. The both sides argument, I thought J.D. Vance covered pretty well there. There is a problem on the left, on the right, with extremists, and it's at some level even violence. It's just much, 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 much smaller. I really do feel for the two people in Minnesota that were killed, one of them a Democratic representative, by someone who, at least in the previously, had aligned his views with more conservative causes. It does happen. It's rare, but it does happen. I am a little tired of it being used as the only example that they can come up with, because they just keep bringing it up over and over and over and over and over again. Well, I mean, he didn't bring up that one time that happened. Yeah, okay, that did happen. And it is important. Any loss of life is important. But the numbers show this over and over and over again. And the left has tried all these things, done all these things, to the extent that actually their presidents tried to throw our presidential candidates in prison. That's how much they've targeted the other side. And their ability to act as if the last decade and a half did not exist is frankly impressive. I mean, just the balls to attempt it is impressive, but it's not going to work. People aren't that stupid, I hope. And it's important to focus on what J.D. Vance said. He said over and over again, 99% of Democrats don't want to do these things. He said over and over again, yeah, there's a problem on the right. The problem on the left is just worse. And he said over and over and over again, with, I think, real clarity, what he wanted to do here. You know, what was the one thing? What was the one policy proposal we heard from Donald Trump saying putting Antifa on the terrorist watch list? There's no reason to disagree with that. These are people that are burning down cities, committing violence against police officers. Of course they are. And in service of an ideology, they fit that characteristic perfectly in my mind. But in addition to that, he said he was targeting these groups that are funding these awful people who are cheering on the assassination of another human being because of their favorable tax treatment, right? We're going to do something to them. We're no longer going to give them the benefits of this if this is the way they're going to act with it. And I think that's completely appropriate. You obviously have to make sure you're following the process, but I think completely appropriate. I have too much to do here, but let me just tell you, let me just end with this. We're talking about a part of our community that has real trouble designating reality from the truth. When you go to them with all that stuff that I just outlined, and you hit them with it over and over again for years and years and years and years, this isn't a group of people that one of which might just be nuts. This is a group of people where a lot of them are having real problems determining what reality is. When you hit them over the head with this nonsense over and over and over and over and over again, they and the people around they are going to have some issues, and it could very well lead to violence. It doesn't seem like the left cares if it does. That's a massive problem, and we have to solve it. All right, this month is National Preparedness Month. It's a perfect time to step back and ask yourself, if something disrupted your access to the pharmacy tomorrow, would you be ready? And if not, what can you do about that? Well, we've been talking about supply chain issues and natural disasters, civil unrest, all the stuff for a very big, big chunk of time here. But how can you have peace of mind through all of that? Well, having the right medications is one way to do that. And if you're not relying on luck or hoping things blow over, you're going to feel a lot better. That's why you want to get in touch with Jace Medical. They have the Jace case. This gives you 10 essential emergency medications, including prescriptions, antibiotics. They're delivered right to your door, so you're not caught off guard. With Jace Daily, you can secure up to a 12-month backup supply of chronic medications that you rely on every day. They're even running a special sale right now in honor of National Preparedness Month, making it more affordable than ever to get ready in advance, not after it's too late. Enter the promo code STU at checkout. Get a discount on your order right now. The promo code is STU at Jace.com. J-A-S-E.com. The promo code S-T-U. Jace.com. Promo code STU. I want to bring in Aaron Sabarium. He has been doing great reporting over at the Washington Free Beacon on everything going on with the Charlie Kirk investigation. Aaron, thanks so much for taking the time to come on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You have an exclusive FBI investigating social media accounts that appear to indicate foreknowledge of Kirk assassination. There's a lot to go through here. There's a ton of different messages that I saw popping up in the moments after all of this happened. What have you found? What are they looking into right now?
Yeah, so there are at least seven different accounts that posted things that, at least in retrospect, could be read as indicating foreknowledge of the Kirk assassination. Now, obviously, people post crazy things on social media all the time, and I'm sure that many of these posts, at least, are flukes and, really shocked if, all of them were actually knew about it ahead of time, or were part of some grand conspiracy. Nonetheless, the FBI is taking it seriously. I think in part because it's not just one or two posts, it's several. And many of these accounts, not all, but many appear to have been kind of linked to the same constellation of kind of LGBT subcultures, which we know the shooter was at least tangentially linked to as well, insofar as his roommate and apparently boyfriend was transitioning from male to female. And it appears that he was in, I think, some Discord communities with a lot of strange LGBT stuff. So the FBI is looking into that. We don't really know much more at this point, except that clearly there was a kind of raft of really quite disturbing social media posts that law enforcement has now deemed serious enough to investigate.
Yeah, it's interesting because you see these things, and in retrospect, they all look like, oh my gosh, these people had to be involved. Let me give you an example of the one that, though, to me, struck me as probably not. This is one. This is number one, by the way, guys. Someone tweeted, "It would be funny if someone like Charlie Kirk got shot on September 10th." They tweeted this on September 3rd. Then on the 11th, they just wrote, "Did I?" almost in a way of jokingly saying, like, "Did I cause this in advance?" And then tweeted again and said, "Donald Trump, December 14th, almost like they're trying to manifest these events. Now, that strikes me as an absolutely horrible human being in every way I can possibly imagine. But like that very well, while incredibly coincidental, could have been something flippant. Some of these others, though, seem almost seemingly like they had direct knowledge. There's speculation that one of them may have been the actual, assassin himself. Do we know? Is that the way they're looking at this? Do they think there's a network of people that could have been involved? I mean, I know you can't. You can't dive
into. Yeah, I don't
really
know. I don't really know the details. I think they want to be sure at the very least that there was nobody else involved, because at least right now, yes, the shooter's roommate is cooperating, but I think there were some reports from Cash Patel and others that indicated the shooter may have been speaking to someone on the phone or his earpiece shortly after the assassination. I know Patel said something about there being some kind of like note that was destroyed, but then somehow forensically recovered or verified. Because law enforcement communication about this is kind of all over the place, it's really hard to know what's real and what's not. But, you know, I think the important thing that we really shouldn't lose sight of is clearly there are people in these kind of online subcultures who just have an extraordinarily disturbing worldview and an extraordinary sort of bloodlust for political violence. And you can, I think what these posts really show or what they do is they offer a window into the kind of social media cesspool that the shooter was likely marinating in. And, you know, it goes to show that if you spend enough time where people, I think, are saying stuff like this, it's not crazy that, you know, one potentially mentally unstable guy is going to kind of get the idea, oh, well, you know, all these people in my social media networks think it's okay to murder Charlie Kirk. Well, maybe it is, right? I think it shows how normalized the thought of political violence has become, regardless of whether these accounts had anything to do with the actual shooting in a direct way.
Yeah, it's so disturbing. And I think, you know, you're right. I think the average person just looks at this, even like an average person on the left might look at this and just say, oh my gosh, this is horrible. And we have seen some of that. There have been some good reactions, I think, from people on the left and some responsible ones. The shocking, I think, thing for people is they're seeing it in their own feeds. It's not even just like a news story. They're seeing relatives, they're seeing friends, they're seeing people that they thought they got along with celebrating this. And it's very, very disturbing. And I don't, you know, it's a pretty tough situation for a civilization with the First Amendment to deal with, right? Like, how does a country that respects free speech, wants people to be able to say crazy things, it's part of our country, how does a society deal with a problem like that?
Well, look, I mean, there are legal tools, right, that can be used to distinguish between just really vile but protected speech and speech that appears to communicate threats or that warrants some kind of surveillance from law enforcement, even if it's technically constitutionally protected. I mean, there is a body of case law about this. I think we can kind of apply existing First Amendment jurisprudence to these cases and make meaningful distinctions. You know, the options are not just sort of do nothing versus shut down the internet, right?
Right.
You know, I would say too that ideally, frankly, the government really should not be censoring, right? The government cannot censor protected speech, and protected speech does include, you know, celebrating assassination, however vile that may be. I mean, you are allowed to do that under the First Amendment. But, you know, the First Amendment doesn't prevent civil society from responding when someone does that. And frankly, it doesn't prevent civil society from revoking certain social and professional privileges from people who glorify the deaths of their political opponents. And we've heard a lot of rhetoric about, oh, this is just right-wing cancel culture. I mean, I'm sorry, but that's silly. Cancel culture was when views that were well within the Overton window were met with disproportionate social and professional sanction without any kind of due process. You know, everyone knows or should know that celebrating the death of your political opponents and calling for assassination is out of bounds, right? That's not the same thing as reading Huck Finn out loud in school, right? These aren't remotely equivalent. And so I think it's just doing, you know, violence to the concept of cancel culture to say, oh, well, you know, both of these are cases where someone said something and got punished for it. You believe in cancel culture too. No, I mean, there's a procedural aspect to cancel culture, but there's also a substantive aspect. And the substantive aspect is that what made cancellation what it was that people were getting canceled for mainstream views that everyone, at least until 2 minutes ago, have regarded as a legitimate part of public debate. I hope that, you know, we aren't at the point where political advocacy for political assassination is a mainstream political view that's just part of public debate in the same way the pro and con side of affirmative action is, right? I mean, these are different things.
Yes. I you know, frankly, I think everybody knows that on their side as well. I think this is a somewhat of a desperate tactic to try to push back and have something to say in these moments. That's what it at least seems like to me. I do want to hit on the constitutional aspects here that we're talking about, though, because we did get this from Pam Bondi yesterday, and this has been, you know, now widely discussed. I want to play it for people who haven't seen it. This is Pam Bondi talking on the Katie Miller podcast about what they're going to do as they look at the reaction to the Charlie Kirk assassination.
There's free speech and then there's hate speech. And there is no place, especially now, especially after what happened to Charlie, in our society.
Do you see more law enforcement going after these groups who are using hate speech and putting cuffs on people so we show them that some action is better than no action?
We will absolutely target you, go after you, if you are targeting anyone with hate speech, anything. And that's across the aisle.
You know, you wound up responding to that particular audio with the Charlie Kirk tweet. This is what he said about this. Hate speech does not exist legally in America. There's ugly speech, there's gross speech, there's evil speech. And all of it is protected by the First Amendment. Keep America free. That was Charlie's take on this. And, you know, I look at this and I think this, I've heard this argument before. I've just only heard it from the far left.
Yeah, what she said was false as a constitutional matter and deeply misguided and myopic as a policy matter. There is no legally cognizable category of hate speech in the United States, nor should there be. I thought her comments were frankly embarrassing, coming from an attorney general. I'm sorry, there's just no other way to put it. And she tried to do some cleanup where she said, well, you know, by hate speech, I'm just referring to criminal acts, you know, or making threats. Like, well, okay, but that's not hate speech. That's something else. That's action. That's conduct. We already have existing legal categories for that. No, and I will say I have been gratified to see that basically every single person on the right I follow has condemned her comments. I mean, no one's happy with this. Goes to show you, I think, that you know, people will say, well, you know, Trump's a cult of personality, MAGA will never criticize his appointees. That's not true. I mean, I'm seeing really dyed-in-the-wool MAGA partisans go after her for this. So yeah, I think she really poked the bear with that one. That was not a good thing to say.
Yeah, it was disturbing, I think, too, because it almost seemed like she had no awareness of the argument at all. Like, I mean, this is a long-term existing argument on hate speech that the right has had a position on. You know, it's one thing if you want to say, well, this is different because, and give some sort of justification, but just to kind of blurt it out there, like, oh, we're going to go after all hate speech, obviously. I mean, it's like a ninth grade blogger's understanding of the Constitution, very disturbing. The whole thing is very disturbing, though, and Aaron, I appreciate you going and shining a light on all of this. And I'll let people go to your article to see all the tweets, but some of them, I think, do cross the line of potentially trying to encourage violence or especially.
Yes.
I would you agree with that? Because I did feel like there's a few
I think it's a close call, yeah. And I'm not sure any of them actually go over the line, but they certainly, some of them dance right up to the line. And yeah, I mean, I don't think glorifying an assassination that's already happened is incitement.
Right.
But if you are talking about how great it would be if Charlie Kirk got shot,
I think it's legal.
It's probably legal, but it's really, you're getting into slightly murkier territory. And generally, I mean, even if it's all legal, that shouldn't be the bar, right?
Yeah, right. No, 100%. I mean, and to your point, there's a very high bar to cross the legal line. I mean, it has to create the potential or likely potential of imminent violence. Like, it is a super high standard to cross that line. Some of these are on the borderline of it. But like, I do think society functions better when it is a very difficult hurdle to clear for the government to crack down on any speech, yeah. Especially in a country with a First Amendment like we have. And we can say, you know, especially as the tweet that you bring up, we know Charlie believed that. He believed that strongly. And if we're going to honor his memory, this is a good way to do it. Aaron Sabarium, a reporter for Washington Free Beacon, has been great reporting on this and so many other things over the years. Aaron, thanks so much for all your hard work.
Thank you.
I must mention here today a very important, today's a very important day in our history, and a day I actually believe should be a national holiday. Now, this doesn't mean you get another day off, okay? I understand that you might want another day off. We all would like another day off. But I will say, I do believe this should really legitimately be a national holiday. It is Yeltsin Supermarket Day. And you might not know this story at all, but it is, I think, one of the most important stories in American history, honestly. It's that legitimately important. So it was a story about Boris Yeltsin, who came on a visit to the United States. This is when the Soviet Union still exists. He's coming over to the United States. He goes to a supermarket in Houston, not like the supermarket that all the rich and powerful people in D.C. or Hollywood use. No, just a normal supermarket in Houston, Texas. And he went in there, and the story, he was so overwhelmed by what he saw there, mostly by the kaleidoscopic variety of meats and vegetables available to ordinary Americans. This is from a biography written about him, Yeltsin, A Revolutionary Life. For a long time after he left Houston on the way to Miami, he's on the plane to Miami, he sat motionless, his head in his hands. "What have they done to our poor people?" he said after a long silence. He added, on his return to Moscow, Yeltsin would confess the pain that he had felt after the Houston excursion. The pain for all of us, for our country, so rich, so talented, and so exhausted by incessant experiments. He wrote that Mr. Yeltsin added, "I think we have committed a crime against our people by making their standard of living so incomparably lower than that of Americans." In an aide, Lev Sukhanov reported to have said that this was the moment that the last vestige of Bolshevism collapsed inside his boss. So the Soviet guy comes over, he sees our grocery stores and just is like, oh my gosh, what are we doing to our own people? And what's fascinating about that is in that time, the average U.S. supermarket had about 9,000 different products. So think about that from a person who had bare shelves in the Soviet Union this entire time, comes and sees 9,000 different products in some Houston grocery store. That number now has increased as of 2023 to 31,704 different items in the average grocery store, almost four times as many things available for purchase. A fascinating story, and wound up being a big ingredient in the fall of the Soviet Union. So I legitimately would love this to happen. Yeltsin Supermarket Day, a national holiday. It's one of those things that we really should recognize, maybe more important than some of the other crap that we celebrate. Yeltsin Supermarket Day. Happy Yeltsin Supermarket Day to all those who celebrate. All right. So here's what happened on the Emmys. I'm sure you were watching. Very much into it. I'm sure you watched the show Hacks as well. I'd like to explain to you the plot of it, but I'm not going to attempt it. I will say there's someone named Hannah Enbinder who won the award for Hacks, and she was up there giving her acceptance speech, became a big thing because she was quoted as saying, as part of her acceptance speech, F ICE, screw ICE, and free Palestine. Now, that's not actually the correct quote. The correct quote, and I kid you not, this is real, was, "Go Birds, F ICE, and free Palestine." As Meatloaf, I believe, said, one out of three ain't bad. So anyway, I don't know who this person is, but apparently an Eagles fan, so I like her a little bit more until I realize all the nonsense that she believes. What's funny about this, beyond her nonsense, is this. This tweet from the Cuds News Network that highlights her saying free Palestine. It's like a, you know, I guess a, I don't know, pro-Hamas website. They show this, but they show a video of it. And if you look closely, it's a little blurry. When you zoom in on the video, they've blurred her because her shoulders are out. So it's okay for her to say free Palestine. This is how she was dressed. She was dressed totally respectfully. It's not like she was half nude or anything. Can't show her shoulders, though. Join us tomorrow on The Charlie Kirk Show.